Hello, parents, coaches, and players. Welcome to another episode of Shot Happens. I am Robert Hay. Happy to be back with you. And as always, with me is the co-host and the brains of the podcast, Reed Maltby. Coach, we are recording this in the beginning of winter. So has the temperature dropped at all on the West Coast?
Oh, yes. We were freezing this morning. It was like, I don't know, 48 degrees or something.
Oh, goodness. Oh, that's winter coat weather, right?
Oh, yeah, totally. I actually had a sweatshirt on all day because it was only in the 60s.
Oh, egregious. That's a terrible life right there. All right. Well, this isn't a show about the weather and complaining about East Coast versus West Coast weather. This is your show about youth soccer, travel soccer, academy soccer. We have a special guest on tonight. We're very fortunate to have him. Mr. Tommy Park, who is the executive director of the Alexandria Soccer Association, which I will put up front, I am biased towards. That is my local soccer club. And Tommy, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much for having me.
So why don't we kick it off by, why don't you introduce yourself? Because I always find that people introduce themselves better than I do. And talk a little bit about yourself, where you're a little bit about your background, and then get into a little bit about the club. What makes ASA special in this world of youth soccer?
Sure. Well, feel free to cut me off, but I grew up in the DC area in Maryland, and was fortunate enough to play in recreational soccer and then go on to a competitive level where I ended up going to Dematha High School, which is well known for their athletic achievements, but also are very strong in a lot of other things. But went on to University of Mary Washington, where I actually played soccer and lacrosse, and focused in academically in the business administration side of things. Came back to DC after actually taking an injury, which ended my playing career. It may have ended anyway after college, but, that kind of forced me into looking at alternative ways to stay involved with the game. And, actually my high school coach at Dematha and the principal called me up, offered me an opportunity to come back and teach business classes to juniors and seniors and coach in the soccer program. And I had done a little bit of coaching in college and started my coaching education with U.S. soccer during that time. So kind of fast forward now, 10 years later, I taught and coached at Dematha for 4 or 5 years. During that time, went to Georgetown to study sports industry management, because I kind of felt the passion and love for coaching and teaching. Also during that time was running DC United summer camps. I coached their under-20s for 3 years. I had actually played for them in college as well. So that kind of was my connection coming back and through the Dematha coach, David Evans, who brought me back, connected me with that, but also have my youth soccer club first experience up at SAC in Columbia, Maryland, which is one of the biggest clubs in Maryland. So kind of had a little bit of everything there with coaching and teaching and the more traditional academic setting. Randomly through a friend of mine at DC United connected me to a board member here at Alexandria Soccer, and didn't think that it was going to be a job because Alexandria actually at the time, this is 6.5 years ago, didn't have any full-time staff. And it was very much a kind of smaller, still very much a volunteer-run operation. Ended up coming here and taking on the executive director role. At the time, we had about 1,800 kids in 2011. We now have almost 5,000 kids participating in various programs, from our early childhood educational toddler classes to our biggest program, which is our recreational league, which is about 3,000 kids. and 400 volunteer coaches to our what we call we have our junior academy and academy programs, which is our fully professional coach run programs, and we're now introducing adult soccer as well. So we we want to be able to support the community and provide all soccer programming at all levels. And, we've built a really good, quality team of, from our board of directors to our full-time staff, which is 10 now here in the office, to our staff coaches, which is about 50. And we've got, like I said, probably over 500 volunteers who do all sorts of different things to support the kids in the community. But we're really proud of our focus on the community, and we've 2 years ago went through a huge strategic planning process to really determine what we're doing. Why do we spend so much time out on the fields? When we're not a pro club, we don't have the development academy title or some of the fancy league titles that a lot of people tout. And that's what drives quite a few people in this industry. But I wanted to show our community that we can have, high performing teams, but that isn't necessarily what we're our primary focus in terms of what our purpose is in this community. So we've done a lot of different things and have had a lot of new initiatives, but we do pride ourselves on the content, first and foremost of we are a school, and then obviously trying to get that content out in different ways through our staff coaches and our volunteer coaches and everybody else. So it's been really fun, and I'm really excited to kind of take our club into the next stage of maturity and everything else.
Yeah, and I'll let Tommy take a breath here and also plug one other thing is Alexandria is also doing a lot of after school now programs as part of that, reaching out to the community. So one of the nice things about his perspective is, again, this isn't, I think what we see a lot of times, as parents or as people who follow the news is, you get this impression of what a travel soccer club is. And it's, it's a club or it's a group that tries to get the fanciest names and the fanciest titles and, bring these players in and, hit the stereotypical pay for play. But, that's not the case across all of the U.S. There's a lot of clubs out there that are doing a lot of good things in the community. But this is an important topic, but this isn't really what we're going to talk about tonight. What we discussed ahead of time was talking about, something for, our parents and players out there, which is kind of evaluation of their travel academy soccer experience. Now when Shot Happens first started, we started off with talking about the tryout process. Coach walked through some great perspective on, how as a parent you survive the tryout process, how you encourage your child, make it or not, and, going forward. But kind of what we want to talk about tonight was, the ongoing evaluation. How does the club evaluate a travel academy player? How do the parents do it? Where's the nexus? How do they all get involved? And how is it a productive experience for everybody? So I'm going to start us off with the first question, and then I'll turn it over to Coach for his questions, because I know he at his perspective, there'll be some interesting feedback. But Tommy, a question for you is, you talked about the professional coaches, you talked about the travel structure a little bit. Talk about what you and your coaches look at when you're evaluating players, both during the tryout and then after when they make a team. What are some of the things that you look for these players coming through?
Yeah. So, I mean, I think, again, I think because of the diversity of our, even within our academy or travel program, I think we have to, really be able to recognize where kids are at in their own development and what kind of exposure they may have had to different educational tools, and then be able to identify whether or not that travel program, you know, would kind of achieve our goals and their own goals within the game. And I think the biggest difference between a recreational setting, you know, because I think this is the first thing we're talking about, right, is when when we're evaluating a player, you know, I think the same thing, the first question we ask is, everybody started in the recreational environment. I mean, that's everybody's first experience. So when they transition, are they ready for that more structured learning environment? Are they, are they in a position where they can, stop and listen to a coach? Do they have that, kind of passion for the game and willingness to learn? Because again, that's, we talk a lot about our content, and if a kid's really not that into it, if they're kind of just standing around and it's obvious that their parent just brought them there and they're not really that interested, that's going to be kind of the first thing we look for. So is that interest level and how active are they on the field? So I think when you go to that first evaluation session or tryout, that's kind of the number one thing that's on there. Are they active? Are they engaged? Are they having fun? And then I think you can kind of from that point go to the more technical components that we look for. I think we as a club, we obviously value, and I think athleticism, this is a sport, right? So you look at pure speed of a player, their, explosiveness, quickness, strength, all those different kind of athletic variables usually determine how quickly they can play. Because I think for us, we have different tiers within our structure, and the biggest difference is speed of play between the different teams. Some of the players who may not be as athletic have to be very quick in terms of how they think. And for us, we are we focus a ton on preparing players' thought process and being able to make great choices on the field. So a lot of times we place a huge value into, the intelligent, the soccer IQ of a player. So we're looking at kind of all those different things when we evaluate players, and obviously how we're evaluating players kind of in that first U9 to U12, when it's more of a small-sided experience. Things kind of change and, expectations rise as players get into that 11v11 environment. And they've gone on to kind of our performance, stage of our development cycle.
So I love the fact that you brought up rec, because it is a lot of times the child's first experience, and a lot of times kids come into the select, quote unquote, realm, and they come with a background, but nobody wants to look at that background. So they don't want to look at that starting point. And so every kid sort of comes in zeroed out, and then they're all compared against each other based on that zero out. And it's like, well, no, because they all come in at different levels, and you have to understand where they came from. But what I really want to dig into is, and then I do have a question regarding like continuity of the evaluation process. What does your evaluation look like? How many times a year do you do it? Who's doing the evaluations? What is the actual evaluation itself? Is it is it a number system, or is it more closer to something we do in kindergarten, like a rubric?
Yeah. It's funny you ask that, because we are always evaluating our evaluation process, because we've tried narratives instead of just, because numbers are only valuable if it's relative to something, and if you don't know what it's relative to, you could give a kid a 4 out of 5 on dribbling. But what does that really mean? You know what I mean? Like, what does that 5 mean? And what is the 0? It didn't really help anybody. It just shows, like, maybe your passing is better than your dribbling. But how is your passing and dribbling relative to your peers? Because essentially, you know, when we do tryouts, we're evaluating kids with their peers. And it's only the peers that are there, you know, within that group in terms of player placement. But when we evaluate kids throughout the year, our coaches are given, a template essentially to use to, you know, give seasonal evaluations after the fall. And then what we try to do in the spring is to do the individual evaluation before the tryouts. That way the kids and parents, you know, are kind of getting feedback on a more consistent basis so that when they get to a tryout, they're not like, oh, wait, our kid who's 10 years old isn't given this opportunity to be in, you know, our travel program anymore. Like, wait a minute. Like you guys said in the fall, you know, she was progressing great. And then, you know, a lot of times I think the biggest challenge for us in this evaluation process is, I mean, there's so many variables, right? But for us, the most passionate evaluation time period is tryouts. And so that's when people get the most confused, because a kid could have progressed throughout the year and a parent is paying a lot of money for their kid to progress, right? But the evaluation at tryouts is simply a team selection based on how they progressed versus their peers, you know, and then if 4 kids come into that group, and they could, you know, fill out in different areas, the actual team assignments are going to work out, and the perception could even be that the player went from our second most competitive team to our third most. And then, oh, wait, that's a demotion. You know, like, we're at, you know, that's why we try to do more checkpoints throughout the year, encourage, you know, coach to player interaction, parent to coach interaction, and, you know, all three within these seasonal evaluations. And then in terms of the actual evaluation form, like I said, we've gone from that numerical system to a completely narrative where it's kind of taken right out of our curriculum at that specific age group. So that's almost an educational tool at the same time, you know, saying this season we focused as a club, you know, and a coach on emphasizing, you know, your first touch within building out of the back in the first stage of that. And, you know, and your child's ability to make a decision under pressure was improved, though they could place more emphasis on, you know, working out of practice to take a, you know, a better first touch, or if it's more, you know, their character stuff, work rate, coachability, desire, you work that stuff in. If it's physical, a lot of that's really hard to address because kids are growing and changing every moment. So you don't really talk too much about like their speed, you know, like you just kind of, you know, you can address that, you know, maybe, hey, they're not necessarily as fast as their peers right now. So we encourage them to make, you know, look up to see the field before they receive it so they can make a quicker decision. Because they're not going to be able to just run past players. You know, those types of things are part of our evaluation process throughout the year. But we're always trying to get better because everybody's so busy. And the only time really that people are on the sidelines at practice and focusing on it are during tryouts, you know, because they are terrified to have that conversation with their child, as they should be, if they're going to have to tell them, you know what, the coach is not giving you an opportunity this year in the travel program and their kid's 11, you know, like how do you have that conversation? Or you were on the second team this year, the coach said you were doing really well all year and you were progressing, but you're going to be on the third team next year, you know? So those are I think for us as a community club that supports a lot of kids, you know, right outside DC in a very heavily populated area, those are the hardest and most challenging evaluation time periods that we have. And we've learned from that, and we've tried to become better at having more consistent touch points so that everybody can support the child through that potentially disappointing team placement, you know, at the end of the year.
So you have I'm assuming that the vast majority, given your numbers and especially the growth, that the vast majority of your players, they stay with your organization from rec all the way up through, right?
Yeah.
Like you,
that's the vast majority, yeah.
Do you keep a continuum on the evaluations? In other words, like, is there a resume that these kids are building over the years, that like medical records that travel with them? So a kid comes into the program, in the after school program, and some of your early childhood education stuff, which, by the way, absolutely love that you used early childhood education, that term, that's where your starting point is. But so they come in at like, you know, 4, 5, 6 years old, they're working in your after school programs, they're getting, you know, the physical literacy pieces and some of the values pieces and just some of the behavioral pieces that matter, the software that matters. And then they enter into your rec program, and then they graduate up into the performance program, and they're moving up through the ranks, and now they're 13 or 14. Have you kept track of all those evaluations over the years? So they have this little mini resume that they're carrying with them. So anybody working with them gets to see their history, where they've come from and where they are.
Yeah, it's awesome. I love that question because, you know, we talk so much about, you know, what we're doing. You know, we talked about the content and what our vision is, you know, in supporting these kids over time. And I think as a school, we want to be able to track that, you know, kids as individuals are being, you know, are progressing. And I'm actually looking right now at one of our evaluation forms, and, you know, it has the technical, tactical, psychological, and then it has an action plan. So it's funny you asked that, because we have a lot of this stored kind of in like a Google Drive format right now. It's a little harder to pull out, you know, if within the drives we can search players' names, but there are tools now, just, you know, for the public who's listening, there are tools that are out there. Where it'll just be a little bit more seamless to like pull up a player's profile over the number of years. But we certainly have that ability. It's not something that is like on an app right now, or a specific kind of evaluation tool program that I know a lot of schools have. And, you know, they're definitely a little costly, but, you know, since this is what we do, it's worthwhile to have that type of tool in place over time. But the beauty is, I've been here almost now 7 years, and a lot of our coaches have now had multiple years within the club. I think last year we had 42 staff coaches in our academy program, and 38 came back. So having that, you know, you talked about continuity and consistency and being able to track players over time. We spend a lot of time before our evaluations, that annual kind of tryout, transitioning from our current coaches to the new coaches. And we actually put coaches in age group bands, just like schools, U9, U10, U11, U12, U13, U14. You know, so that way, you know, they become experts at the content at those specific ages. And then they, you know, they can speak very, you know, in an academic and in a, you know, in a way to the next coach, where it gives real content for each individual. But I do think that, you know, I think that for anybody who's out there, you know, that's something to ask of your club, you know, can you, and something to keep as a parent, you know, each evaluation, if they're sending them, you know, we send them to parents as PDFs and or print them out and meet in, and we even do it in our junior academy at U7, U8, and can show, you know, what's being emphasized over time. But I do think that what we've tried to go away from is, you know, giving these numerical scores, because they really don't mean anything. You know, it's not like a 92 out of 100 on a test that everybody's taking the exact same test. You know, they are taking on all of the different, you know, components within the game and as an individual player within their own learning environment and within their own team. You know, this is a team sport after all. So, you know, there's a lot of different variables. I mean, sometimes one player on a team can change the entire dynamic of the, you know, the psychological makeup of a team. And how does that individual respond? And how does the coach respond? You know, so these are kind of things that make the sport and as a club different than a school. You know, so, you know, we've got a team sport at least. So it's a little bit more challenging from that front.
No, I'm glad you mentioned the score piece because that's, if you're a parent listening or even a coach or club administrator listening, take warning on this. When you start using numbered scores in these evaluation processes, you're treading outside of the realms of reliability and validity because you're expecting potentially across the kid's career four or five different coaches to use the same number. And you're also expecting the number to be relevant across the kids. And like you said earlier, I may give the kid a 4 in dribbling, but Tommy, you may give the kid a 3. And so because we have a different ways of approaching it. So I like the fact you're using a narrative or something like a rubric. It's why we used rubric with younger kids. Is how do you judge a group of kids where they're all over the, especially like kindergartners, where they're all over the board on their reading skills and everything? You can't compare them to peers and you can't compare them to any kind of hard data. So you have to look at a rubric. Can they do A, B, and C? Then it's a 1. Can they do A, B, C, D, and E? It's a 2. Can they do? And it gives you a much better way to capture. Plus, it allows you and I, Tommy, to have closer scores because we see exactly in the narrative what we're scoring. And I can say, yeah, that's definitely a 2. And you're probably going to see the same thing and say, yeah, that's right in the 2 range too, right? So I'm glad you moved away from that number because we did numbers for years in clubs and it was all over the board.
Yeah, it means nothing. I'm reading one. I'll just give you an example under our technical components. You know, we'll do a strength. On the technical, so strength, receiving the ball, demonstrates a consistent ability to receive across his body with a foot that will allow him to go forward. Area to improve, passing, demonstrates an inconsistent ability to pass the ball with the appropriate pace in the game situations. So it kind of gives a little bit of information to an application to the game so that they can say, you know what? I never even thought about that. My kid actually does a pretty good job of like receiving the ball, but then really can't pass it that consistently. So, you know, and again, this is for the most introductory, right? So the language and the narrative becomes more in depth and specific as the kids get older, you know? So this might be for like an 8-year-old, who's just learning to, you know, pass and receive consistently, receive the ball at pace. You know, because a lot of the times that's the challenge, right? Again, with these numbers and evaluations is that sometimes, you know, you're evaluating these players, like I said, against and with a certain, you know, speed of play. And everybody within those groups hopefully are playing at or around the same speed of play. And they may be able to consistently receive and pass the ball at that speed of play. And so as a parent and as a coach, you may be evaluating them in that speed of play as consistently being able to receive and pass the ball. But if you move up into a higher speed of play, would they be able to do that? And would they be able to do it as consistently? And that's what I mean by these team placements and evaluations often being one of the hardest pieces within this kind of, you know, educational in sport is that, you know, you're evaluating, you know, kids in that specific environment. And until you move them into a different environment, you know, and that's a luxury of having multiple level teams within our club is that we can seamlessly give kids an opportunity to challenge themselves, or if they're not having consistent success, slow the speed down a little bit, you know, and have more success. you know, and more opportunities to develop consistent, you know, habits over time. So I think that is the hardest part. I think what we do is that these kids are at all different developmental stages, physically, in terms of the tactical, psychological part of the game. All those variables are changing all the time. And the second you move them or adjust them into a different speed of play, things can fall apart very quickly, or the opposite, you know, it can click, you know, and a kid will pick up and, you know, shoot through the roof in terms of their abilities. And I think that is, you know, kind of the beauty of just, you know, I think one of the notes I marked down was, you know, having the non-franchise mode, you know, where no coach feels like they own a player, or, you know, within a learning environment, or no parent, you know, feels like it's just like this, you know, kind of video game, you know, where I can just, if they're not going to tell me what I want, you know, I can just change. And then, you know, what's that teaching? So I think that there's a lot that, you know, kind of goes into this evaluation process, but I think trying to get content out of the evaluation instead of numbers is going to really help you support your child, or if you're a coach, support your player, you know, more consistently over time.
I also like the fact that you're also supporting the other coaches. I did a call this morning with Dottie Rothenson, who is with Icelandic Soccer, and you know what they've done with 300,000 men and women. They're putting them in the Euros and in the World Cup, and so we got into talking about this, all, you know, everybody, as many kids as possible, as long as possible, in the best environment possible, which is what they do. I mean, everybody has a chance to play all the way up to like age 19. And he made a comment about the seamlessness between the coaches, that the coaches are constantly helping each other. And you hit the nail on the head. There's this franchise feel. There's these kingdoms and fiefdoms that spring up, even in clubs themselves, where a coach will sabotage a player's ability to move to the next level, to go to another coach, because they want to keep that player on their team because that player helps them win. And it's like, no, right. Your job is to develop them, and then your job is to help the next coach with, you know, valid information. And that's what Dottie was saying. You're doing exactly what Iceland's doing. They pass the information along, so the next coach that has this kid knows exactly what they get and what to do and where they are in the timeline. And development is a wavy line, and it is not it is not linear, and it is not one way. A kid could make leaps and bounds today and then tomorrow look like he's backtracking or she's backtracking because of some piece of the puzzle in the development, and then make another leap forward. And that's we got to embrace that.
Yeah. I mean, I think you're spot on, man. And I do. I see that all too often, you know, and I think, you know, in terms of the, I know we wanted to kind of talk about overall, you know, as a parent or, you know, a coach or, you know, within this, evaluating your child's experience, right, and learning environment, and knowing when you're in a club or a community that supports that type of, you know, content driven, but also, you know, doesn't feel this, or you know, coaches don't have this pressure put on them to, you know, win, or I have to keep all these players so that I can, you know, make my wage, you know, or, you know, there's so much of that in this industry, that the talk about what is being, you know, I almost never, when I hear, you know, parents in the DMV talking about, you know, their kids' experience, I almost never hear them talk about what exactly, you know, outside of kind of the buzzwords of, you know, technique, you know, we do a lot of like, you know, like ball skills. I rarely hear about the application of the game or how they're being nurtured over time and what those transitions are like. Because it for me, it seems like a, you know, I'm going to each year find whatever, you know, team or coach, doesn't matter what club they're at, are going to, you know, fulfill those, you know, whatever, you know, kind of surface level validation my kid needs and wants, instead of saying, here's, you know, this is a sport, and, you know, if my kid is going to enjoy this game for a long period of time, they're going to, you know, obviously need to be in a fun and nurturing environment, but be given meaningful instruction so that, you know, the data shows the more comfortable you are within a game, the longer you're going to play. So if you're given all the different inputs and nurtured, especially in that U9 to U12, U9 to U14 time period, you're going to play for a lot longer. And I think that should be our number one goal as a club, not to say we're, you know, developing the next national team player. I mean, there's so many things that have to happen right, you know, for, I mean, and or a club could do absolutely everything wrong, and a player could still come out and be unbelievable, you know, just because they're, you know, gifted athletically and they played a lot of street soccer, you know. And so right now there's not quite the accountability that needs to be there on content and, you know, this natural progression, the support of progression over time, because it's always just this one year. And, we'll fix, we'll change leagues, we'll go to a new tournament that, you know, allows us to win. You know, and it's not really focused on, you know, this piece that you're talking about, you know, this individual, support and flexibility to ensure that they're in a good learning environment every year. And having real thoughtful information that you're giving the kids, and the parents, over time. So I think we've really made an intentional effort to do that, and we've seen participation triple, you know, in 6 years within the community.
Absolutely love what you're doing, Tommy. So I want Robert, though, as a parent whose child is now entering this situation with you, because you just talked a lot about, you know, recognizing the child and working with the parents and all that. I want Robert, who's getting ready to start this whole process with you, and hopefully it's a lifetime of the kids working with you all. I want him to ask the questions that he has as a parent so that the parents out there listening can really gain a real understanding of what you have. Because I'm looking at it from same viewpoint you are, Tommy, and you're on to gold here. I've been in enough clubs and seen enough clubs and worked with enough clubs to know you're doing something right. So, but I want Robert to ask some questions from the parents' perspective.
Yeah, well, let me jump in with – I got two questions, and I'll start with following up on, Tommy, your last point here. We mentioned, you know, the club's success, it seeming with keeping players and coaches involved throughout their youth career, if you want to call it that way, their youth time. You know, there's not a lot of turnover. Players will stay from rec to travel or rec to rec to rec. But that's not the case with a lot of clubs. I mean, I know people. In fact, I have a friend of mine that had wanted to chat about, you know, finding the right club because she wasn't sure if her son, who's a gifted soccer player, is in the right place, you know, the right environment for him. So, mm-hmm. Carla, if you're listening, I apologize. I never had that conversation with you, but I owe you coffee. So, Tommy, why don't you talk a little bit about the situation where there's a parent who doesn't quite know if their kid is in the right environment. Like, from your perspective, what are some of the signs that a parent should be looking for that the kid isn't adjusting or the environment isn't right for them? And then what are some of the steps that they should take to find that right environment for their young soccer player?
Sure. Yeah. So, I mean, that's a really, you know, interesting challenge, right? Because again, I relate this back to a school environment, right? Mm-hmm. And I personally don't have kids, and trust me, people remind me of this all the time. But I've seen so many different parenting styles. So many, obviously, every kid truly is so different. That, you know, even, you know, for us, and I've actually, you know, I've I've had parents come up to me and say, you know, you all have, you know, a great program. We've loved all of your values, the community interactions, you know, but my kid is just not getting along with this specific personality that you have at, assigned as a coach at this age group. And that coach specifically may do some things, you know, every coach has their strengths and challenges, you know, and just like in the classroom, you know, the beauty of a school typically is that you have six different teachers or five or, you know, or a specialist, you know, homeroom and all these different types of things. So, you know, or, you know, always that next year you're going to get a different teacher. Whereas, you know, I think we mentioned that at a lot of clubs, you know, a coach is going to be at that team and age group for a long period of time. So what I'm getting at is I think the first, you know, thing to evaluate is that, that specific educator, you know, the coach and, you know, how is my child interacting with the coach? Because as a parent, that's something that you can help with. I mean, you can, you know, if you're in a supportive environment and a good club culture, the coach truly does care about your kid, and doesn't just value the best player on the team or the best couple players and says, you know, your child is kind of on the lower end of my squad. So I'm just gonna, you know, if you guys want to leave, go for it, you know, that type of thing. If you're in a really positive club culture, they're going to want to support them. And so if things aren't going so well and your child is, you know, showing a lack of interest and wanting to go to practice, you know, talk to your kid and try to get to the bottom of, you know, where their frustrations are. It could be as simple as a teammate who makes fun of them at practice or, mm-hmm. you know, so try to get to the bottom initially, you know, what is driving your child's either joy and passion for it or what is frustrating them. And I think before you, you know, look, you know, outside of your club, try to, you know, be a part of the solution initially, because I think for the most part, you know, people are good and they want to help, you know, kids, and they're in it I'd like to say for the right reasons, you know? Mm-hmm. And so if that adult who's supporting them on the field, you know, with these professional coaches, at least, and even in the volunteer coaches, have a conversation so that you as a parent are showing that, you know, you care and you want to better support them and team up with the coach. And, you know, have these evaluations, you know, maybe even outside of the scheduled time period, you know, don't wait for those. And so be proactive. I think that's the first thing. And then I think if you are doing all of those things and you see that, look, the culture here, the community, that we're in is not in line with, you know, really trying to support my child and their growth and passion for this game. And they're really more, you know, focused on just trying to find the next best player. Doesn't matter where they're from. We'll just take them in and move on, you know, to the next year or to the next season or the next tournament. And I think it's pretty obvious, you know, if you step back for a second, you know, that would be the case and try to find an environment that has a support structure where, you know, their coaches aren't, you know, being paid to win, but are being paid to be quality educators. And there's really a purposeful support plan in place. And I think, you know, these are just kind of like basic values that clubs should have, you mm-hmm. know, that I hate to say it, they're not typically there because this is such a new industry. And right now people are say we're getting paid to coach. So you expect us to develop your kid as the next pro when that's not realistic. That's not the case. You know, 98% of the players at this club are not on our most competitive teams right now. And so mm-hmm. does that mean that all of those professional and volunteer coaches that are out there putting tons of time into helping those players become better players and people, you know, they shouldn't get paid or they shouldn't be recognized for the volunteer because they're not producing pros? Absolutely not. I mean, I've run into coaches that have coached 20 pros because of just the institution or, you know, being in the game for a certain amount of time. And I've got coaches that are coaching U8 at our club that I think are more knowledgeable, are more professional, and are in, you know, could have potentially even given those pro players better information. Mm-hmm. But again, we're a little bit in love with this, you know, this exposure piece mm-hmm. and this pathway piece that leads to, you know, pro players. Instead of saying, let's do all the right things that allow players to continue to enjoy the game within the appropriate environment. And if we do those things and we have great content, meaningful content, we have so many players playing, we won't be asking these questions. The kids, you know, are going to be educated well, and they're going to be the highest performing athletes in the world because of all the resources that we have, you know. So I think we're kind of going about it backwards, and I think that, you know, as parents, that you know, that also needs to be a realistic question you ask yourself, you know, too. Like, all right, this I understand that my child has a dream to be a pro, but even, you know, if that's the dream, how can I support them? Now, I don't want to, you know, as a coach or player, take that away from any player, whether they're in the recreational or competitive or, you know, call it what you want. That is a great dream to have. And I would, you know, foster that for anybody. Mm-hmm. But how is your structure and content, you know, checking yourself, taking away that just kind of, you know, flashy, you know, desire to say we've hosted a U.S. national team player here at the club, to saying, you know, we've got three times as many kids playing in this game and enjoying it than they did 6 years. You know what I mean? Like mm-hmm. that for me, you know, and I mean, you know, as a parent here, we've got national champions, you know, we've mm-hmm. got kids performing at a national level. Do we share that? Yes. Do we share our free after school programs more? Yes. You know, so I think it just has to be a balance, and to kind of, it's kind of a whirlwind answer, but to bring it back to that individual and the parent, knowing that that club and that those coaches are supported in a way where they care about an individual, regardless of where they are on the developmental, you know, spectrum, is your first evaluation tool. And, you know, making sure that at that team level that they're going to be supported, and there's flexibility between teams over the years, is huge.
So I want to kind of drill down on a point that you made, and it's the idea of parents getting involved, and this will lead into maybe the easiest question you'll be asked all day. It's something that I think, especially when you're a parent of a child in a populated area or a very big soccer area, is this idea that if you are not uncomfortable, that's the wrong way to put it. If you feel that there's could be something better at the club that your child is currently playing at, you know, there's some things that you can do to help make some changes or to improve the experience. It's not, you know, you shouldn't just mm-hmm. hop to mm-hmm. the next club, you know, a couple of miles down the road. So piggybacking off of that point, talk about, from your perspective, what the ideal parent is for a player's development. What does that parent look like? You know, you talked about everything from an administrator perspective, from the player perspective. What's the ideal parent doing throughout this process? Are they sitting there watching practice? Are they making their own notes? Or are they sitting in the car, you know, answering work emails, and then when, you know, 1 minute before the final whistle blows, they're there with, you know, Gatorade to feed their player. You know, what is this parent doing throughout all these processes?
Yeah. Man, we actually did a town hall meeting this year for all of our parents. You may have been there, where we did a model player. What does our kind of model player look like? What does our model coach look like? And then what is our model parent? And I think, you know, just I think for us, because, you know, we went for when we, you know, full disclosure, when I first got here, I was like, all right, parents, just go hide. You know, like, we got this. You know, like, I'm an A license coach. I know what I'm doing. You know, you've never played the game, or even if you have, you've never taught it. Just go away. You know, like, we've got it. And I think that that right now is something that, like, I've heard a ton of. You know, we're gonna shut off the gates. You know, close the gates and just, you know, get away. And in fact, I know that a lot of environments do that. You know, a lot of different learning environments do that. And you know what? Fine. But the reality is these are kids. These are 9, 10, 11, 12. And, you know, if you shut parents out, you're losing an asset in the developmental process, because the parents can be a huge, you know, asset in their development, not only of just, you know, being positive and, you know, trying to take their mind off of things sometimes when they need to on their car ride home or whatever else, but also, you know, when the kids are talking about soccer, or talking about team placement, or talking about, man, I wish that coach would just let me shoot the ball, you know, or having a basic understanding. I mean, so we try to give, you know, why are our coaches, we do our, you know, we kind of give a cheat sheet on club philosophy and style of play. Like, why do you guys spend so much time doing pattern play, you know, building out of the back? Why aren't you just standing in a line and, you know, my kid can't pass the ball. You say he can't or she can't pass the ball consistently. Why don't you just spend time just passing, you know, in lines? So we try to do, we even sometimes do like a parent practice where our coach will run the parents through the kids' practice so that they can kind of understand. But so, I mean, just to go through the list, you know, obviously there's understanding the club's philosophy, style of play, you know, respecting officials, players, coaches, parents, other parents. One specific thing we tell our parents is to not yell direct instructions to any players on the field. Reinforcing the club style of play by watching and talking about soccer. Communicating to coaches when practice or game conflicts arise. And then I think the final piece is getting engaged, volunteering to support the team in other ways, right? So, I mean, some clubs do an amazing job at you know, getting parents involved for, you know, equipment or snacks or social or team managerial stuff. You know, fundraising, all these types of things are great ways to do that. But I do think that, you know, that as a parent trying to understand, you know, from your coach or hopefully from the club, who's guiding the coach, why they're teaching what they're teaching at the time and how you as a parent can support them in that content part, you know. And I think a lot of times, you know, our coaches are saying, look, if you have any questions about why we're telling kids to do, you know, what we're doing, you know, ask, and that way it's not on the ride home, well, you know, your coach doesn't get it, you know, and that's not your fault. Or your teammate should have done this. And I think we see it's so obvious when that's happening, because the kid shows up at the next practice and is like, I know more than, you know, my mom or my dad knows more than you, because they're going to trust their parent first, you know. And so then they stop listening, and then that just it spirals out of control, and or they don't like their teammates because their mom said that, you know, don't pass it to Susie or something. And then it just spirals, you know? So, but I think that there's kind of multi-tiered, But the biggest thing is communication. I mean, parents want great communication from club and coach. And I think if, as a club, we've said, parents, open door, come tell us if your kid is, you know, struggling, or if your coach is not delivering to our model coach expectations. We're here to support. We want the best for it. And if we need to adjust variables within that, please do so. In fact, we just finished our survey that we're going to send out the next week. And we're trying to ask much more specific questions to help us improve the experience for the kids and give, you know, the parents who might not be as comfortable approaching the coach or approaching us an opportunity to anonymously, you know, give us feedback on a survey too. So we do that every season.
Great. Well, I don't want to take up too much more of your time. So coach, I'm going to ask the last question if that's all right. Because I know Tommy's been very generous with his time and we want him to get back to the work he actually was doing before he interrupted it for us. So I'm going to change our usual question. So we began, and I'm going to filibuster a little bit, Tommy, so you have some time to think about an answer. We used to ask the question on the podcast of guests, if you were the president of U.S. soccer, what's one change that you would make to the U.S. soccer system? However, with everything going on, I don't know if we want to ask that question anymore. It's a little bit loaded. So I'm going to ask it a different way. Give me a trend that you would like to see more of, a positive trend in youth soccer.
So our tagline is, we are committed to providing access and quality. And they don't have to be, you know, mutually exclusive. So there's a lot of people that do a really good job at providing quality. You know, they have all the bells and whistles, the most amazing complex, beautiful jerseys, clubhouses, everything that you could possibly ever want or need, video to support a player. You know, we are very fortunate in this country to have those types of resources. But those types of environments cost a lot of money, and rightfully so. Those programs typically don't have the access. You hear this narrative that the pay-to-play model is boxing kids out. Well, it may not be boxing them out of the game. I mean, any kid can play anywhere, but it typically is boxing them out, not of just the highest level, but the mid-level, where it's a good community-based travel program, a third team. You know, the best kids are usually identified and people bring them onto their teams, let them play for free. I mean, you see that across this entire area. If a coach sees a player and they're the best of the best, they get picked out, but it's their friend who's not the best player, but is maybe in 5 years, if given the right support, could or would have been, is not getting it. So then you have, you know, outreach programs that are doing a really, really good job of, you know, getting some grant funding, or, they're doing free in school or out of school programs. I mean, in the DC area alone, I'll give DC Scores a big shout out. They do a great job and in this area of just providing free after school soccer, to kids. Now, you know, do they have any top players in there? You know, a couple, and sometimes they actually even try to, find them a travel team. But then are they going to be sponsored? You know, so it's I think these clubs that are calling themselves community clubs. I mean, every club in this area, for the most part, calls themselves a city. You know, including DC United, including Alexandria. You know, we are labeling ourselves as a city, and our job, I think, is to utilize the unbelievable resources that are out there to, you know, ensure that no matter what we do on the quality side, that we don't do it without making sure that it has access to all. So, you know, in 6 years, we now have 30%, 1,500 kids who are on free or reduced lunch that no matter what program is appropriate to them, they have access, you know, and so we'll give probably over $250,000 in you know, scholarships next year to make sure of that. So quality and access, you know, both of those are super loaded and take a lot of special initiatives. But I think if everybody can balance the two and have a better understanding of what takes what makes a really good community program quality, and never losing sight of the access, we're going to have a heck of a U.S. national team and double our participation numbers and be the most popular sport in the country in 10 years.
Well, that's quite the goal. I think that's one that a lot of our listeners can get behind. So, I'd like to thank our guests for coming on and sharing some knowledge. It's not often that we get such a high level perspective and someone who's worked with at all different levels of the game and being able to talk about some important topics. But Coach, I'm going to turn it over to you since you're the one who knows how to end the show the best.
Tommy, I've been taking notes, copious notes, and I wish I were still working in that realm hands-on, because I would be implementing a lot of the stuff you were talking about. I hope that anybody out there that's involved in clubs, you took notes and you're listening and you reach out to Tommy because they're doing something right. So I always end every episode like this, and I got to tell you, man, after what just happened with the World Cup and everybody to have all the conversation about what we do at the lowest levels of the game through the highest levels of the game to fix this, shot happens, but pay attention to what Alexandria Soccer is doing, because we may just be able to make the save.